Welcome to the Major Thread Podcast, where we talk about the Bible, baseball, and just things related to life. My name is Thomas Majors.
And I'm Daniel Threadgill.
Daniel, I think we have an interesting topic for today. Hey, but before we discuss that, we're meeting in a different place than we usually are, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We're meeting in my classroom at school today.
It's been a long time since I've been in a classroom like this. Kind of brings back bad memories for me.
Kind of weary for you, don't it?
Yeah.
You know, I can go get my paddle and set it on the podium if I need to.
That might make me feel more comfortable. That's what I'm used to.
Oh, me. Surely you wasn't that bad.
All you got to do is ask Mr. Malone. James Allen Malone. Well, I think we have an interesting topic for today. We're going to discuss one of Jesus's sayings from the cross. Now, as we just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, and Daniel knows this, and I know this. We just want to be very specific in how we say this, because we want all of you listening to know that Jesus was nailed to a cross so that he could pay for the sins of the world and bring redemption to mankind. And while he was on that cross, he said seven things. There were seven of those. They're called the seven sayings from the cross. And as he was there paying for the sins of the world, he had these utterances. And we consider those in the study of the Bible to be very important, because a person's last words are always important. And so there is some significance to these last words. Daniel, do you remember what the seven sayings of the cross are? Because if you don't, that's okay, because I've got it written down.
Not off the top of my hand. I know he had a conversation with the thief next to him.
That's right.
That he should be with him in paradise.
That is correct. Today. That's the second saying.
That's the second saying.
That's the second saying.
He may have talked to Mary.
He did.
Before that, I'm just throwing this out there. I'm shooting from the hip right here.
He did talk to Mary, but that's actually afterwards.
Okay.
After that one.
I think he asked for some water.
He did. You've got three of them so far. All right, so.
Then I know the one we're looking at today. That's
right.
That's four.
All right, so here they are in order.
Okay.
The first one. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And that passage is found in Luke chapter 23, and it's verse 34. And then you've already said what the second one is. And the second one is, today you shall be with me in paradise. That's when he's talking to the thief who was on the cross beside him. And that's from Luke 23, and that's verse 43. So one's 34 and the other one's 43, both of Luke chapter 23. And then you've already mentioned another one where he's talking to Mary. You remember he says, Mother, or woman, behold your son. And then immediately he addresses John and says, behold your mother. And so that's found in John chapter 19 in verse 27. Those first three sayings of the cross, they come in the first 3 hours of him hanging on the cross.
We have a documentary of that?
Not necessarily a documentary, but we do have some time references in the Gospels that kind of give us an idea. He was put on the cross, according to the reference, around the third hour. And so the third hour, do you remember that from when I used to preach, what the third hour would be?
The third hour would be somewhere around 9 o'clock in the morning.
That's it, 9 o'clock in the morning. Because they started counting their hours by when the sun came up. And so the first hour would be when the sun came up.
Yeah.
And so the third hour is usually around 9 o'clock. So I can't remember which one of the gospel writers say it, but said that he was placed on the cross around the third hour,
yeah,
which would make it around 9 o'clock. So from between 9 and till about 12 o'clock, he hung on the cross, and that's when he gave those three. We don't know the exact timing of any of that. They didn't count time much like we do today. Right. You know, we've got it down to the seconds. They just counted it by those hours. And so from then, approximately around noontime to about 3 o'clock, he made four utterances. He made four of those. One of them is the one that we're going to talk about. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
And then he said, I am thirsty.
Yeah.
That was from John chapter 19, verse 28. That's the fifth saying. The sixth saying is, it is finished.
It is finished.
That's from John chapter 19 and verse 30. That's a that's an interesting study that we could talk about sometime as well.
Yeah.
It is finished. That's from a Greek word, tetelestai. And it's the tense and what he's saying in that has a lot of significance. And then the last saying is, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And that's from Luke 23, verse 46. So which one are we going to talk about today?
We're talking about, my God, why have you forsaken me or abandoned me, depending on what translation you are. Or Eli, Eli, lema, how you say that?
Sabachthani.
Sabachthani. Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani.
Yeah.
But that phrase, to me, that's a phrase that's interesting to me because he's still human. He's both God and man.
Yeah.
But he also knows why he's sent there. He also knows why he's there. He's there to do this very reason. And he knows that. And he's told the disciples that since, you know, the day of palms, that this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. You're going to forsake me, Peter, three times before the cock crows. They're going to come arrest me. One of you will betray me. You know, I mean, he lays it out on the table. I know he's in pain. And for him to say, why have thou forsaken him? I think just rings true with Christians today that we can relate.
Okay. I would have to say that when you're reading it, there's an emotional charge to it, isn't there?
Right.
I mean, just because of the cry that is made, my God,
oh yeah,
my God. And then the question, why have you forsaken me? So there's, you know, emotional things like that kind of grip us.
Yeah.
Especially if we're reading or watching it, and there's this emotional appeal coming from Jesus on while he's hanging on the cross paying for the sins of the world. So
yeah.
You think we're going to figure it out today?
Probably so. If I had to guess, it's just one simple word, one small phrase in the book. So, you know, I think we could figure it out today. I do.
Well, if we can't figure it out, we'll get pretty close to it probably. And I would just say this, that there have been scholars who have struggled with this question for a lot longer than we have. And with a lot more education and experience. But I think we'll be able to come to a few ideas of what this may mean, and maybe even how we can think about it in our own life. Now, it's kind of strange because in the translation, I think you basically almost read it out for us. he makes that cry, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. And then we have a translation of it, don't we? It says, what does it say? And it means something like, my God, my God, why have you forsaken me? The first thing I would note of interest to that is that he's saying that in Aramaic. That's an Aramaic words that we have, and that's the reason Matthew translates it for us, because there are probably some people who would be reading his book who do not even know how to read Aramaic. And so he goes ahead and translate that from Aramaic to actually to Greek for them, and then we translate it over into English. But he's actually quoting some, he's saying it in Aramaic, but where does he actually get that passage from? Do you remember what psalm that is?
The one earlier from 22?
Yes. Psalm 22:1. Yes, sir.
It says, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, my God, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I find no relief.
Yeah, so Psalm 22 is actually quite a few verses. I asked Daniel before we started the podcast how many verses it was. It was 30-something verses.
Right.
Psalm 22 has a nickname to it. The nickname of Psalm 22 is, it's the Psalm of the Cross. Because not only do we have that saying that Jesus spoke from the cross, but there are a few other things that we find in Psalm 22 that have parallels to the experience of Jesus on the cross. So even though Jesus is on the cross and he's speaking that in Aramaic, he's actually has read it either in Hebrew or Greek before, and now he is speaking that in Aramaic. Now, there's scholars have put a name to that verse, whether it's from Matthew 27, that's the one we're talking about, Matthew 27, verse 46. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. My God, why have you forsaken me? They call it the cry of dereliction. And sometimes they call it the cry of desolation. How are we supposed to understand the cry of dereliction? What happens immediately prior to Matthew 27, verse 46? In when we're talking about the whole scope of Jesus on the cross, said that he's been there, I think it's in verse 45. Maybe it's in verse 45 of 27. We've said he's been on the cross for 3 hours.
Yep.
And then from noon all the way till 3 o'clock, there's something that has happened. And it's in that context that Jesus speaks those words of, my God, why have you forsaken me? Does it say it in verse 45 of 27?
Is that noon darkness fell across the whole land until 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And about 3 o'clock, Jesus called out with a loud voice, my God, why have you abandoned me?
So around noontime, see, we have those time markers there. And so from around noontime, there was a darkness that came over the earth. Right. What do you think that darkness? Now, scholars have wondered about that. What do you think that darkness is? Have you ever thought about that?
Yes. I think the darkness could be angry, being God being angry and showing his frustration and turning his back on that group of people. I think he could be brewing up a storm that we know that's going to rip the veil in half. Because that's got to happen too. That dark when Jesus is not in the picture, it's dark. And in anybody's life, it's dark. So I think it's just I would like to think it's a foreshadowing of how our lives are or how our lives can be sometimes if Jesus is not where in the forefront of where he needs to be in our life. Because it gets dark. It gets dark in a lot of places. This can go back to the prayer one, you know, of last week of Psalm 22. Psalm 22, he said he prayed. I mean, he didn't pray, but he asked. He says, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, my God, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I cannot find no relief. Sounds like something Job's going through right here. You know? So somebody is crying out, but there's not getting any relief done. Or somebody's praying, crying out. I would say crying out to God and praying would be the same thing.
Right. Yes, I would say so.
You know, but sometimes God doesn't answer us or come to us in a nice, gentle breeze like we think he should. Sometimes he is the thunderstorm. Sometimes he is the hurricane that comes blowing the trees down from all directions.
I would agree with that. I was studying and looking at Luke 15, one of my favorite passages, you know, the story, the parable of the prodigal son. And the prodigal son goes to that far country and spends all of his money on riotous living.
Right.
And then after he has spent everything and everyone has abandoned him, then it says, it's just a little phrase, and a severe famine occurred in that land. And it kind of gets me to thinking, I believe God puts us in places like that, that when there's nowhere else to turn, but we turn back to him. So even though everybody else has abandoned him, he's working, but then a severe famine occurs and he is ready to eat the food that he is feeding to the pigs and decides, you know what, it's better for me to be at home with my dad, to be a servant in my dad's house than to be here eating this pig slop. And he decides to go back. So I would agree that God puts us into places sometimes that there's nowhere else to turn but to him.
Yeah.
And he can use those bad situations for his honor and glory. Now, one of the things that I've heard before about the darkness is that it is symbolic of God pouring out the sins of the world on Jesus, that as he is pouring out the sins of the world on Jesus, so we know, right, that Jesus took upon his body our sins,
right,
and he paid the sacrifice for our sins. But there's also a place, where's that at? 2 Corinthians. It's 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 21. And it says something like this. I'll paraphrase. He who knew no sin became sin. You remember that verse? He who knew no sin became sin. So not only was his sins poured out on him, but he actually became sin, according to Paul. So in this moment of the sun growing dark and it's this darkness that covers the whole land for 3 hours it's dark. Some scholars believe that it's symbolic of the sins coming on Jesus and God turning his face away from Jesus. Now, some people would say that was an eclipse. Do you remember that eclipse that happened?
Oh, yeah.
It was maybe about 4 years ago.
I remember we were out on the front porch.
Were you?
Yeah, here, watching it. Had to get those glasses, you know, and look through it and everything.
We, it was actually on August 21st, and the only reason I remember that is because my two sons are born on August 21st. Thomas and Titus both have August 21st as their birthday. And so we had went to Nashville that day to the zoo because you could, in Nashville, it's supposed to be in totality of darkness. But, you know, it didn't last for 3 hours.
No.
I mean, as far as darkness, you know, it kind of got cloud, well, not cloudy. What's the word?
It's dusky dark.
Dusky dark. Yeah, that's a good word. It got dusky dark. And then all of a sudden, it got dark, and it was dark for about 5 minutes in Nashville. I mean, like dark, dark.
Yeah.
And then after that, it got dusky dark again, and then it went away. So it wasn't 3 hours long. So don't believe this is an eclipse that we're seeing in the Bible. Yeah. This is something. This is something else. This is part of the supernatural phenomenon that occurs when Jesus is on the cross. So have you ever thought about that, that the sins of the world may be being poured out on Christ in this moment?
Yeah, I have. I hadn't really thought about it in that sense of at that time frame.
Yeah.
At that time period. I guess I would have always thought that the sins of the world was being cast down on him through the entire time he was on the cross. You know, not necessarily just all at one time, but just throughout the entire period of being on the cross.
Now, that's a valid point. That is a completely absolute valid point. Yeah. And I think he suffered for our sins from the moment that he was arrested.
Yeah.
To the beatings. To the trial, the beatings, the carrying of the cross, and even the cross itself. So that's definitely a great point to make.
I guess just the verse itself, my God, why have you forsaken me? He looks up into the heavens. He knows what he's got to do. He knows what he's got to fix. He knows he's dying for the sins of the world. God knows he's dying for the sins of the world. That's why he was sent there. But in that moment, you're going to still ask, why hast thou forsaken me? Did he want to really save him from the cross, or was he just being in human form and just getting it out, you know, like we would if we were in, if we had to go through pain, you know, and suffering because of something, and we just blurted out something that didn't have any business blurting out, but didn't have anything to do with it, wouldn't change anything, but it made us feel better. I don't know.
So your argument is, if I can put it in some other terms, your argument is Jesus being fully God and fully human, that through this process, his that human side, that human nature side is the, we don't want to bifurcate them too much. We don't want to separate those too much because we don't want to walk down that path.
No.
But that the human nature side of him is crying out, my God, why have you forsaken me?
I think the human side is crying that out.
Yeah. Because the divine side knows, right? I mean, like you've already said, I mean, the divine side knows what is happening, knows the reason. And what he is there for.
There's such strong words to be printed, you know, in the Bible, and such strong words to know that your God is God and a divine God, that he went on to say that. He said, "Why have you forsaken me?" You know, I just, it hurts me a little bit, you know, to even think about that, because, you know, if I was going through a pain and I was calling out to my dad, I'm like, "Dad, help, where are you at?" And I didn't get an answer. I know where he's at. He's standing right there. I'm like, "Why are you not helping?" Can't.
Yeah, that,
you know, and
but he, and I would agree in that the suffering of the cross was some of the most intense pain and agony.
Yeah.
And even before he went to the cross, right? Because remember, he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he was praying so earnestly that great drops of blood came to his head. And he was asking the question, "If it be thy will, let this cup pass from me." So even the thought of the cross was agony. Even the thought of the moment of what he was going to go through was agony.
Sure.
And even at the moment, it was agony.
Sure, I ain't thought about that, tying those two together.
Yeah.
Because if you tie those two together, the Garden of Gethsemane with the letting that cup pass by, and then you have, why have you forsaken me? It's not something that he didn't want to do. It's something that he did want to do. He just knew the agony that he was about to go through.
Yeah.
He knew the suffering he was about to endure.
Would you agree with me that this somehow endears Jesus to us even more so? And the reason I say that is because he is feeling pain and agony in such a way that he is crying out to God. And in some way, it gives us the freedom to do so as well. Would you agree with that? I mean, if Jesus on the cross would do so.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Then absolutely. In our pain and agony, we would do so.
Yeah, absolutely. But are we going to get answered?
Well, if we pray according to God's will. All right, now I've got a question.
Here we go again.
I got a question for you.
All right.
Does God forsake us?
No.
Why do you say no?
I don't think he forsakes believers.
Okay. I'm right in step with you. Where are you going with that?
I think that when we have been saved, we're kind of like in a bubble wrap. Not that we're not going to mess up, get hurt, or sin and sin badly, or do whatever. I don't think God forsakes us. We're now his. We belong to him. We're his child.
Yeah.
Of God.
So I'm thinking of a verse too, and I can't think of where it is right now. I know it's in Hebrews, at least one place in Hebrews. And then I know it's from the Old Testament as well, but where God says something like that, right? I will never leave you
or forsake you.
Nor forsake you. That's right. But I think you were fisting ahead in another direction as well, because you said, as believers, I don't think he forsakes us. But would you agree that for some non-believers, and especially I'm thinking of Romans chapter 1, where it says that the people were so intent on sinning that he turned them over to a reprobate mind so that they would sin, that they would they would have no guilt or no shame in their sin. Would you consider that part of a forsaking of God by God? I think I would. I think I would. Just because now, and we can even go even further and say, but that's not exactly true because he provided a way for every sinner to have a relationship with him through Jesus Christ, right?
That's right. So, anybody who cried out to him would be.
That's right.
Who would hear those cries.
But then as also that there is another that they have wanted to sin, they run after sin, they are never repented of sin to those who had the chance and who refused the chance, now he turns them over to a reprobate mind. So that's some difficult questions, isn't it?
It is.
Does God forsake us? We've talked about the cry of dereliction. We've talked about, my God, why have you forsaken me? We've talked about the cross. Let me ask you this. From what we have read, what we have studied, what we've even talked about now, is it okay to question God and to cry out to God in our pain and suffering? What do you think?
Well, if it's not, then I'm in a bad spot.
Well, if it's not, I'm in a bad spot too.
Because I have questioned and cried out for about a year over a lot of different things, you know, so.
And I think this is a good place for us to even understand that. Jesus is referencing Psalm 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've already said. It's a Psalm of David. And many times in David's Psalms, he is questioning God about something. God, why did you let this happen? Why am I here in this place? Why are all my enemies surrounding me? Will you do something about what is happening in my life? He is questioning God. And at times he is crying out to God in pain and suffering.
Yeah.
And even Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, God incarnate in human flesh, did the same thing. And so it kind of gives us a little bit of freedom in one sense for us to be able to ask God some serious questions, right?
Yeah.
And to cry out to him in our pain and suffering.
I mean, you got to get on your hands and knees and in a closet somewhere to get those answers.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tough. Sure is.
We've only got a few minutes left. Anything that you would want to say about the cry of dereliction or pain and suffering or Jesus on the cross and what he did for us?
No. I was thinking about pain and suffering and stuff in baseball the other night. We, you know, getting hit by a pitch is not easy. It hurts bad, but it puts somebody on base and it hands the bat off to the next guy. They may get hit by a pitch and it hurts, and then they hand it off. And before you know it, you score a couple of runs, but it didn't happen easily. There's a lot of pain to go with it.
Yeah.
You know, but I could go on and on about the game sometimes, and what I see is a parallel correlation to the Christian walk.
All right, so let me ask you this. As a coach, how do you help your students, your players, deal with disappointment? Now, y'all were in the playoffs and just got out of the playoffs. And so how do you help your players deal with that disappointment and are there some parallels for us in our Christian walk today? What you would say?
Well, I tell my players, you know, just like the other night, I tell my players at the end of the game, it's never fun to lose the last game of the year. It's just not. It's not something you want to do. You know, and the seniors are usually the ones that are taking it the hardest because they're the seniors. They won't get to play on that field anymore. And I take them. I take them up. We dismiss, and I keep the seniors by myself. And we kind of join shoulders or arms around each other. And I try to make them understand as best I can that this game that we play is just a game.
Yeah.
Because we can dwell on it, we can cry, and we can, you know, look, I love it so much, I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how much I love it. But at the end of the day, it can't be what's the most important thing in my life is baseball. It just can't be. And I told him, I said, you need to, well, you're going to leave here in a few months, you're going to be in college. And I said, in less than 5 years, I said, some of you could be married with kids. I said, you need to find that special someone like I did that'll take care of you when things get tough. And I showed them my kids over there standing and Blakely running around. I said, you see those two rats over there running around? They ain't nothing like them.
Hmm.
It'll make you forget about this sport and this game quick. And it will. So I try not to dwell on losing as much as I like to look at their future and stuff.
So it's sounds like an argument from perspective. Keeping the main thing the main thing. Sometimes what we think is the main thing isn't really the main thing, is it?
No, it's not.
Because for a high school student, the main thing is that baseball game.
That's right.
And what you're saying to them is,
It's
not the main thing.
It's not the main thing.
That's good. It's good.
It's never the main thing. They know that when they step on the field day one, too. You know, when we step between the lines, it's business. It's serious. It has to be.
Yeah.
You're not going to be any good. But when we come off the field, don't let it eat you up. Don't dwell on it. Don't let it consume you.
Yeah.
Don't let baseball consume you to the point where it's taken away from something else in your life. If baseball is taking something away or is taking something else from your life, if it has stood in somebody else's place or God's place, then we've put too much emphasis on the game.
That's good. That's good advice. Thank you for joining the Major Thread podcast. We've enjoyed talking to you today about the cry of dereliction. We'll be back hopefully next week with a different topic, and hope you'll join with us next time.